This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. It's huge. 85 federal laws that discriminated against same-sex couples and their families have been reformed.
To celebrate, acknowledge and inform the community, the Wear It With Pride campaign has created 85 t-shirts.
Why wear t-shirts with pride? These historic 85 reforms reward decades of protesting. To celebrate, 85 artists are designing 85 t-shirts inspired by each reform. 85 influential Australians are wearing these t-shirts with pride to spread the knowledge across the country. Joining me on the phone is Pauline Vamos, Chief Executive of the Association of Superannuation Funds of Australia. Pauline, thank you very much for joining us on this program.
Pleasure.
What do these new changes mean for same-sex couples?
They mean a few things. One, they bring equity with same-sex couples when you compare them to married couples. Let me just go through a few things here. The important thing to know that the legislation came through in 2008, so it's not that new anymore. It's been in over a year. But the intent of the legislation was to eliminate any discrimination between same-sex couples and the children of those relationships. So really what the Act did was change the rules that prescribe the availability of tax treatment of superannuation death benefits to same-sex couples. And what that means is that it is tax-free in their hands. Previously, because they weren't recognised, any benefits that went to children were taxed. Now they are not. And this is a lot fairer.
And not all superannuation funds are doing this, though. Some have updated to recognise same-sex couples and some haven't. How does someone know if their fund does or doesn't recognise same-sex couples?
The first thing is to ask. I mean, what has happened, which does help same-sex couples a lot, is that the superannuation legislation generally refers to a spouse. Until these arrangements came in place, a same-sex couple didn't come under that definition of spouse. So automatically you're covered by spouse. So if a fund says we don't recognise same-sex couples, then you say, well, actually, no, we are recognised automatically as a spouse. So don't let that put you off.
In 2008, the ASFA appeared before the Senate inquiry advocating for these changes to come in. Thank you for doing this. It means a lot to our community.
We pushed like crazy.
Yep, and it's wonderful to see a mainstream organisation standing up for equal rights of all Australians. Is the ASFA undertaking any education about these changes?
We did at the time, and I know that we were interviewed for a couple of magazines that focus on same-sex couple readers, and we're more than happy to do more. We are actually launching a new website called Superguru, which is aimed at the general public. So we have fact sheets already up on our website, but this website is more like an interactive and answer your basic questions, and I'll make sure, and in fact there is already an area for same-sex couples.
So people, if they want more information, they want to check, they should call their super fund to check if they recognise their relationships. And if they don't recognise their relationships, perhaps they should think about switching to another fund.
It's a very important question to ask your funds. I would be very surprised if funds now did not comply with those changes. They've been in quite a long time.
Okay.
The definition of a spouse now has that concept of living with a person on a genuine domestic basis in a relationship as a couple, irrespective of whether that couple are of the same sex or not. So that definition has replaced that whole concept of husband or wife.
Okay.
So I think based on that alone, it would be very difficult for a fund to say we don't recognise same-sex couples. Now, there may be some funds who are traditionally aligned to certain religious groups who there may be issues with, but I would see that in the vast minority.
Oh, well, that's good news, and it's good news to see that this is working right across the superannuation sector. Pauline, thank you very much for joining us on the show and sharing this information, and thank you for all of the work that you've done on behalf of the community and for the Wear It With Pride campaign.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Nice to talk to you.
Finally, the law is catching up with our family.
That's why we wear this with pride.
Same-sex co-parents are now recognised under family law. 85 federal laws that discriminated against same-sex couples and their families have been reformed. To celebrate, 85 artists are creating 85 T-shirts inspired by the changes for everyone to wear with pride. Wearitwithpride.com.au. Read their stories, see the art, learn more about the 85 reforms and find out what fits you. Wearitwithpride.com.au proudly supports Joy 94.9.
I'm talking to Jeff Field in Sydney about his involvement as an ambassador with the Wear It With Pride campaign. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, how are you? I wish we had a gay radio station here in Sydney.
Well, you nearly
well, it's
did.
Almost gay. We're partly gay, here, the one I work at. I work there anyway.
Jeff, can you tell us a little bit about your experiences and why you're a Wear It With Pride ambassador?
Yeah, well, I read news for Kyle and Jackie O, who you've probably heard of down there, and they gave myself and my partner of 16 years, Jason, the opportunity to get married live on air and live on national television in 2005. We called it Sydney's first illegal gay marriage because we wanted to get the point across that although it was a celebration of our partnership, we were illegal when it came to state and federal governments across the country. But I often speak out when it comes to gay rights and particularly the issue of gay marriage and equality, and I was very pleased to get on board the Wear It With Pride campaign.
So with this Wear It With Pride campaign and your involvement, have you gone through much homophobia in your life?
You know what? I'm very lucky. I think it's maybe the industry that I work in because I've worked in radio from the time I left school, and I've never had really a problem with it. I was had an accepting family and an accepting environment, so I think I was one of the lucky ones. I know a lot of people have to deal with homophobia, whether it's, straight out homophobia or whether it's discreet homophobia, but I'm very lucky that I haven't had to deal with it. Thanks.
Why do you think people should wear these 85 law reforms with pride?
I think they should wear them to let the community know that gay people need the same rights as everyone else. We certainly don't want anything more, but we don't want anything less. We want exactly the same, and I don't think that's asking too much.
Do you think that these law reforms are going to make a big difference in the lives of same-sex people?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Adam. I can assure you that already Jason, my partner, myself, we've seen our financial advisor, we've got our superannuation rolled into one, we've got, the Medicare safety net working for us, we've got all sorts of things happening. So my advice to your gay and lesbian listeners, if they are in a partnership, to get some advice.
Yeah.
And you would be amazed at how much money you could end up saving. It's fantastic from a financial point of view.
It sounds as though you've been really part of an ambassador of this whole project right from the start. Jeff, that is a terrific story, and thank you for sharing it with us here on the Community Radio Network.
My absolute pleasure, Adam. Thank you so much.
Changes to tax returns for same-sex partners are for the one you submit after June the 30th, 2010, for the year 2009-2010. For more information, visit wearitwithpride.com.au. wearitwithpride.com.au.
The Wear It With Pride project has been sponsored by
the National LGBT Health Alliance, a coalition of organisations from across Australia that provide health programs, services and research
targeting lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and other sexuality, sex and gender diverse people.
wearitwithpride.com.au. wearitwithpride.com.au. Over the last 20 years, there has been an increasing acceptance, awareness and respect for gay and lesbian people in Australia.
Attitudes change slowly at first, but we are seeing significant changes in all areas of our culture.
So are gay and lesbian people still at risk of violence? In this show, we'll look at some of the issues faced by gay and lesbian people in regional and rural communities.
Regional centres are close to capital cities like Wollongong, Newcastle, Geelong, Gold Coast, Rockingham, Mandurah have reasonably quick and easy access to gay support service and social venues.
The people who live in more isolated areas like Townsville, Yass, Albury, Derby, Alice Springs, etc. are all in a different situation. They do not have a big city close by and they can't escape to it.
To discuss these and other issues, we're joined by Greg Atkins of the Anti-Violence Project.
And can I say what a huge pleasure it is to have Greg Atkins, one of my closer friends here in the Community Broadcasting Fraternity and fellow broadcaster on Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9. Hello, Greg.
Thank you, Adam, and thank you, Peter.
Now, we're going to talk about violence, but can you give us a little bit of a rundown on the AVP?
Well, we were the peak not-for-profit group in the gay and lesbian community that deals with violence within and against the GLBT community, set up about 13 years ago, set up in January 1997 and actually became a formal organisation a bit later that year. And we've since then gone on to become a registered charity, so you can donate, listeners, if you want to donate to provide some postcards or donate to provide some posters or some telephone costs, fray some costs so we can actually do our online reporting and have people talk to people as they make reports. That's the sort of organisation we are.
The Anti-Violence Project, it's Australia-wide?
It isn't Australia-wide, Adam. What we have is we have a major anti-violence project in New South Wales, which was originally, a love child of the rights lobby in New South Wales that was set up maybe about 17 years ago. It's now a program area of ACON. In Victoria, we have the Anti-Violence Project of Victoria, which has been independent for 13 years. And actually, the rights lobby was a love child of us, also the Victorian AIDS Council and other organisations. We all got together and spawned the rights lobby in Victoria. A bit of a twist on that relationship. So we're fully independent. There is no other anti-violence project per se covering any other state. However, at the Health Indifference Conference in Sydney about 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, we did manage to establish a national collaboration around anti-violence initiatives, which will see an Australia-wide sharing of information and resources, developing of programs in one part of the nation that can then extend to regional rural centres completely across the continent. So it's going to be a fabulous initiative.
From your experience in these matters, there's two things I'd like to know from you first. How are we travelling? How is violence happening? Is it being perpetrated still against gay and lesbian men like it was 20 years ago, or is it getting better?
Well, when violence takes place, the nature and the impact of the violence is exactly the same as it was 20 years ago.
Right.
It has the same negative and long-lasting reach into a person's life. What has changed is we're now legal. Being gay is no longer criminalised. We're now legal. We now have better supports. We now have rights in nearly every sector of society. And we can stand on our own 2 feet and collect with other people to say when it takes place and is not supported, there needs to be change. So underneath the episodes of violence that will and do take place, there's a lot more support, a softer landing for people to land, probably more so in metropolitan and larger cities than in rural regional centres. But I think that's the next extent we've got to take change.
So has the reporting increased or is it about the same?
I think the level of reporting increases, ironically, because we're very lowly funded. We rely on media. We rely on every opportunity we have to promote ourselves without having to pay for it. We don't have the funds largely to pay for promotion of anti-violence project activities and violence mitigation. Whenever we do get a run in the media, or we get a speaker at a public group, or we get a legal firm starting to refer people to our site, we get a spike in increased reports. It doesn't mean that they're not happening any other time. It just means when people become aware of the AVP, or they see our commentary in the gay press, or they hear us here on Joy, because Joy have great supporters, there'll be an increase in reporting that takes place as a result of that. But right across the time, violence is taking place and still taking place. And the issue I think we see, Adam, is 1 in 10 rural-based incidents of homophobic violence is being reported, and only 3 out of 10 in metropolitan areas is being reported. So that means there's 9 out of 10 people experiencing violence in rural regional areas that are not reporting it to anyone, not discussing it or reporting it at all. That's a problem.
Later in the show, we're going to talk to somebody in a regional location who's going to tell us a little bit about the experiences people have in regional centres. See, here in big cities, we have a reasonable support network. If there's a violent attack or something happening, we have gay and lesbian liaison officers in most capital cities with the police forces and the gay organisations, so you can go to them and get some help and report the crime. Because a lot of people find it confronting just to walk into a police station, gay men, because in particular, and lesbians, because we haven't over the years had brilliant relationships with the police. And there's still, even though things are so much better now, there's still a certain degree of mistrust and fear about interfacing with the police. So the gay and lesbian liaison officers help a lot. But in regional areas, it's possibly a little bit different.
Do you know that mistrust is probably more our vintage?
I think so.
And Peter and myself. It's our vintage because we are the storytellers for the younger gay people coming forward. They get our narrative and they learn our experiences and they learn to adopt that as what they should expect when they have similar experiences.
True.
I think we're talking about generational change.
Yep.
Until we're no longer the principal narrative makers in the gay community, I think there's a degree of stick about the past poor problems we've had around homophobia and around police response. And look, when we've moved on and other people take our shoes and they've had better experiences, I think the narrative will change.
That's right. I think you've hit the nail right on the head. But in the meantime, I'm afraid it's our narrative which is going to be telling the stories. And we are the total sum of our own experiences. Our existentialism is what forms our opinions and the basis of our tapestry of community. Sad as it is, but it's true.
I think the police force, so aren't they recruiting differently now? They're recruiting people who at least have some degree of
diversity.
There.
Well, Peter, we go and train. We actually go and AVP is part of community encounters, and we actually actively go and help train the new police recruits. Now, I had another volunteer went in a week before last to do the training as part of that. And he had reported back my experience, which is a huge breadth and depth of men and women, more women than ever before, but men and women of range of ages from 18 through to in the 50s. So they're recruiting people right across the age spectrum instead of a narrow band of people. Mm. And then within that, they're recruiting people of different cultures, different faiths. In the middle of the mix, there are people of same-sex attraction. They've got it right. The police force now and their recruiting actually are delivering tomorrow's police force today. So they've already had the generational change in the recruitment side.
Is this the case across Australia and in regional and rural locations as well?
I was lucky enough about 3 months ago to come and sit in on a meeting here in Melbourne of all the gay and lesbian liaison police from around Australia that we're collecting here in Victoria. And I know there's some best practice or opportunities for best practice that people are embracing and running with in various states. They are sometimes a little bit different in how they do the training and delivery, and maybe that's because it's tailored to the local gay and lesbian community or the need to integrate gay and lesbian with multicultural, multi-faith communities. But the Victorian model is one that whenever I'm at those meetings, I hear people asking for copies of how the model's developed and rolled out here in the states. So I think it's a bit of a leading model in Australia.
So the type of police officer is different to what it used to be years ago, and I don't think there was any great academic level necessary to be a police officer in those days, and their attitudes were very sort of, as it was in those days, pretty homophobic.
But Peter, it was the homophobia led by the top. It was like a vacuum sucking all the power up to the top.
Yeah.
You think back to when the AVP was set up and a few, year or two afterwards, we had a homophobic police minister who went out there quite publicly and was homophobic. And we also had a homophobic police commissioner. Now, it's changed totally.
Hmm.
And thankfully, the AVP is totally independent of police. We might work alongside them, but we also can give them a bit of stick when we need to. We're totally independent. But in the gay community, we haven't changed that much in the gay community. We're still, we address issues. We work together as community groups. We perhaps need more interaction between the various community groups to make a stronger coalition about how to deal with it inside our own communities.
what I want to look at is, are we still... You made a good point about generation. We're the generation, we're the storytellers, we're the ones with the life experiences. And the young generation, when they become broadcasters for and they've been around for a few years, they'll have different stories to tell. But are we still at as much risk as we were 20 years ago?
Well, I don't think we are.
I don't either.
I don't think we are. And that's... I know 20 years ago, what kept me in the closet when I was a kid, it was the real, very real prospect of being bashed or being taunted at school, as some of my schoolmates were, had a horrendous time. In fact, ironically, the three campus guys at school that were tortured and harassed and attacked by the homophobes all through school, and now the three longest married straight people out there with wives and kids, just they were effeminate, and the people were picking on them for being gay.
And they actually weren't gay.
They were actually straight. So it's the experience. There's many straight men out there that are subjected to homophobic taunts that aren't gay as well.
You know what? I never thought of that. Isn't that really interesting? God, I'd love to hear their story one day. Let's see if you're in touch with them. Can you see if you can inveigle them to come and tell us?
I am in touch. I mean, we had at their last reunion, we had a get-together with a gathering, probably about 50 people end up around us, where we were talking about their experience of being gay-bashed when they were actually straight guys. And then the other eight guys, including myself in that group of 50, that didn't lend a hand to stop the homophobia taking place against these straight guys because we're too shit scared about us being attacked for our true sexuality.
Were the guys who did the attacking there as well?
One of the guys that was there that did the attacking, I think, is probably out and gay now.
Yeah, that's the other great irony of these situations. Quite often the people perpetrating at school and in gang situations, the violence, they're doing it because they have internalised homophobia and guilt complex about their own sexuality.
And another one that was one of the principals of that little group, he was the jock, he was a fantastic, fantastic sports person, beautiful looking man, great eyes, fabulous person, has had four or five failed marriages / relationships and never settled permanently with a woman because, I mean, he and I both know that he's gay because we know that he's gay. Don't worry about that.
Yes, you've had the experience. It's quite an ironic when you look at internalised homophobia and how society perceives homosexuality. I just want to do a little quick aside here and tell you a very amusing conversation I had with Eddie Maguire a couple of weeks ago. We were looking at images of homosexuality and latent homosexuality. And I said to him, you know, during the 80s and the early 90s, the AFL players used to wear those incredibly tight shorts. I said, and I remember a number of times hearing American psychologists and people who knew nothing about football and AFL coming out to Australia and saying, you know, the costumes they're wearing, the tank tops and those very shorts do suggest a homoerotic and latent homosexual tendencies. And I think about a year later, the whole thing changed. They went to the Michael Jordan baggy shorts look. So I just wonder if that had any impact on the whole thing. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo with Adam and Peter. Our special guest today is Greg Adkins on the Anti-Violence Project. With us in the studio today is Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project. And today we're looking at some of the issues and the elements of our violence and what it's like living in regional and rural centres. And we're joined by someone on the phone called Michael. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Michael, and thank you very much for coming on and telling us. Now, you're... Greg, could you tell us a little bit about Michael?
Yeah, Michael, this is Greg Michael from the Anti-Violence Project. And Michael is one of those men in rural regional centres that has taken his initiative to make contact and actually report a situation when it's not safe for him in a rural regional centre using the online reporting service at the Anti-Violence Project. So we thank you for that, Michael. Thank you for your leadership amongst the gay community by doing those reports.
Not a problem. Something has to be done about the homophobia in regional areas, so...
Would it be appropriate for us to disclose what that regional area is, Michael, or would you prefer us not to say where you are?
Absolutely, you can disclose it. Absolutely.
Okay, so you're in Warracknabeal?
Yep, Warracknabeal, yep.
Which is?
Warracknabeal is about 3.5 hours northwest of Melbourne towards the South Australian border.
Right, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm 29 years old. I've been living around this area for about maybe 3 years. Yeah, there's really not much to tell, actually. I'm a stock standard type of person, so...
Okay, you've been there for 3 years. Where were you living before that? Were you living in a regional area, or did you move from the city?
I moved from the city.
Okay, so you've moved out to the country.
It's a big step and a big change, isn't it, when you move from the hustle and bustle where you've got supports at your fingertips to a rural regional centre where you have to recreate your own networks.
Absolutely. It came as a great shock, it did.
How old were you, Michael, when you moved?
I was 27.
Yeah. Can we ask you why you moved out to the country?
Basically looking for a change, looking for somewhere a little bit cheaper to live, basically, yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't there to move in with a partner or anything like that?
No, I was already with a partner when we moved.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the nature of what happened to you?
There's been a few separate incidences, one regarding the local pub down here. Basically, I've been refused service because they refused to serve my kind here.
So they actually said they would refuse to serve your kind. They described it like that.
Yeah, basically, yeah. One of the people behind the bar, he has since been fired. I did make complaints to the owners of the pub. He has since been fired.
Good on you.
So I'm very pleased with that. It's a win, basically. Another incident when I was basically walking back from the local shops back to my home, there was a younger guy sitting down listening to a Walkman. He called me a faggot as I walked past. And then the incident in Warwickmobile where there was three guys, basically they were getting into a car, they saw me talking on the phone, and then they just let rip, basically.
And now if I could describe what they said to you, they actually said to you, they called you a fucking faggot.
Yeah.
Similar words to describe you as being a scum. Yep. And then they also said if you look at them again, they were going to kick your head in.
They also said that, you know, if they see me in Warwick again and stuff like that, they were going to kill me. Basically stuff like that. Then they jumped in the car about maybe three or four times. They drove past screaming basically the same things from their window.
Now what I want you to do, and anyone that's listening to this that feels distressed, if this makes you feel distressed, you can give us a call at the Anti-Violence Project on 0407 66 442 after this show, and we'll get some supports for you, Michael, or anyone else that feels distressed after hearing Michael's story or talking about it.
Yep.
But then, straight after this took place, you would have felt particularly vulnerable.
I did. I have started walking around, like, you know, looking over the shoulder. Basically, I kind of get a bit nervous going back into town and stuff like that. I mean, these guys did come across as being quite serious. Stuff like that, basically.
So what steps did you take then at that moment? Did you just go home and lock yourself away? Or what steps did you take to try and reclaim some safety for your...
Luckily, I was in town with a friend. My friend wasn't actually with me when this happened. We basically walked around town for a while. I have reached the point where I refuse to run. I refuse to lock myself away. It doesn't help anything at all. When I did come home, that's when I jumped on the internet and I reported it to the Anti-Violence Council. I kind of figure, you know, it's like it takes one person to make a stand and hopefully others will follow, so...
Michael, I'm really impressed by that. Yes. On behalf of the people living in regional and rural parts of Australia, the gay and lesbian people, thank you. It does take one person to start all going. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. So these guys, they abused you, they threatened you from their car. Were you able to identify them?
To a degree, generally when a person is kind of like yelling at you, saying, if you look at me again, we're going to kick your head in, you tend not really want to look at them, basically. They were probably in their like early 20s, like late teens, early 20s. They have, one of them had brown hair that was tied into a ponytail. Another one had tattoos on his arms.
So they fit the visual demographic and the age demographic of young men going out to perpetuate violence and do stuff
absolutely.
Like this.
Absolutely.
You reported it to the Anti-Violence Project.
Yep. Where did it go? Did it go anywhere from there?
What we did with the anti-violence project, we get online reports, and people can be totally anonymous, and they can request to have their names withheld from police or their contact information withheld. But in Michael's case, Michael said, no, I want to make a stand. You're welcome to pass on my information to police. So we did, and I know the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Police have actually followed up with rural police in the area there about the particular issue, and it will lead probably to some training that will support the local police to better support gay and lesbian community and challenge homophobic incidents. Mm-hmm. And it starts to map now. Obviously Michael didn't make a formal complaint, but had Michael made a formal complaint, then they would have interviewed people or whatever. But what it does is there's an informal information that goes to police from Michael's report to us, and that starts to build a profile about people that are threatening other people, gay men or lesbians, in that regional rural district.
Michael, if it happens again, will you go to the police?
Absolutely.
Okay, yes. Because I think that's what you really want to do. We cannot afford any more. We will not, as gay and lesbian people, tolerate violence and abuse and vilification anymore. Peter and Greg and I have had it most of our lives, but we've seen somewhat of a renaissance, but we live in the city, and it's different. Michael, do you get a different feeling from the community in the regional area?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that. What do you feel?
Basically, I'm finding, like, around the regional areas, they're still basically set into a very old way of life, mm-hmm. basically. You know, the men go out and work and play football, and the women, you know, look after the kids and do charity work and volunteer at the local schools and stuff like that. It is still very, very, I don't know, I kind of liking it to a very medieval kind of way that, like, regional communities still operate.
But just as Michael's been part of that sea change, Adam, into the regional centres, more and more people are coming with a more open mindset, different values, okay. different attitudes. And Michael, really, you're a bit of a tip of the iceberg in terms of people shifting back into rural regional centres. And I think they're going to challenge the existing generations-old value set that sees the man play footy and the woman at home with the kids.
That's it. Basically playing football was one of the suggestions that were given to me in order to, like, kind of integrate myself more into the community, is if I joined the football team, then maybe they could see me more as me rather than, you know, the gay guy that lives in the corner house, which is what I am actually referred to.
And Carolyn Simon's research come out to play, released 2 weeks ago in the middle of the Akamanas stuff, showed that Australian rules football is still not a safe place for gay men to come out, because people want to play, but they can't because of the discrimination they face when they do go to play.
Mm-hmm.
But Michael, really, do you want to play football?
No, I'm not a party person.
Me too. My natural tendency when I see a ball coming towards me is to run away and scream. So, yes, come out to play might be fine, but that's not me.
No, I'm in exactly the same boat. It's kind of like, no, it's muddy and dirty and I don't think so.
So, yeah, of course, what they were saying to you is that you need to conform, change who you are and become what they want you to be.
Yeah, well, bullshit to that.
Well, Michael and you guys here in the studio, I managed to play football out in the eastern suburbs for Heathmont, and I managed to play most of my games without getting a speck of dirt on me, without being in the middle of the fray and everywhere. And in the middle of winter, raining, I never had any mud on me.
Now, let's bring this...
Were you water boy?
Let's bring this a little bit into perspective. So we have Michael living in Warracknabeel, who's facing homophobic abuse. You haven't actually physically been attacked yet, yeah?
No,
but you have a fear that that's going to happen from the abuse that you've had.
It is in the back of my mind, yes. Okay.
And psychological violence, sorry to interrupt, Michael, but psychological violence is actually more insidious than actual physical violence. When there's physical violence, there's a start and there's an end. Yeah. There'll always be an end. Mm. But with psychological violence, it lingers and it continues on, and that's more insidious.
Exactly. I'm actually quite finding that. It's like, you know, I mean, I don't particularly want to be hit, but at least, you know, if you are, bruises do heal. However, you know, the nervousness and the looking over your shoulder and, you know, the kind of checking around the corners before you walk around them is actually, I think, is far, far worse.
Michael, I'm getting the fit. Michael, are you scared?
I'm scared to a point. However, I think I've kind of reached the point where I've had enough. I kind of, I refuse to allow myself to get scared. It's okay. Like, you know, this is my home, and I refuse to be driven away from my home.
So you don't feel inclined to just shut up shop and just come back to the city then?
The thought has crossed my mind. However, that would be letting them win, and I refuse to do that.
Michael, from your experience, what would it be like for young gay guys growing up in places like Wurrung?
I think it would be hard. It would definitely be hard. It would have to be one of the biggest decisions they would have to make as to whether or not they want to come out of the closet or whether they would basically stay in the closet and just conform.
Is there any social or support network for you in Wurrung, Nabil?
No, not really.
Okay. So most of your socialisation stuff like that would happen, I'm guessing, on the internet?
No, actually. Like I have one or two friends here and stuff like that. I don't basically go onto the internet to like basically find others. I know in Wurrung Nabil there is actually a few gay men and lesbians, but it is very, very hush hush.
Do you get together with them at all?
What was that?
Do you get together with them at all?
No, I don't. Another problem that I am finding in regional areas is that a lot of the gay men and lesbians around this area are very guarded. Mm-hmm.
That's a shame.
And that's that question people keep saying, oh, well, the more people that come out, the easier it's going to be. The dilemma is, you should only have to come out once and not keep on coming out. And if it's not safe to come out, then people probably are more guarded because they value their ability to live lives fully and fruitfully without having to come out every second moment.
That's it.
Michael, we might wind up this conversation now. Thank you so much for sharing it. What I'd like you to do for us, there are a lot of young gay, or not necessarily young gay and lesbian people listening to this show in regional centres around Australia. Can you give them a little bit of a message of support? Because you're just the person to do it.
I think the only message I can give to all of your listeners is that, you know, we all have voices and we all have words. Basically, this cannot keep going on, and the more we use our voices, the louder it does become. So don't be afraid. Just fight for your rights, because, you know, we are beginning to get some with this new legislation. Just fight for our rights, basically.
As we heard in the Wear It With Pride episode at the start of the show today, what we want in our regional and rural centres, and indeed across all of Australia, for all Australians, is acceptance, tolerance, respect and diversity. Michael, thank you so much for joining us on Allegro Non Troppo, and thank you, Greg, for bringing Michael to the show.
Fantastic, Michael, and all the best out there.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network with Adam, Peter and Greg. In the studio with us today is Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project. We're looking at the issues for regional and rural people, gay and lesbian people, coming to terms with their lives and sexuality, and are they at more risk living in the country? And we've been speaking to Michael on the phone, who lives in Wurrung Nabil, and his experiences would tend to us to think that perhaps it is a little bit more dangerous or a little bit more risky, or that's not the right language to use, actually. It's more of a personal issue. You need to be a little bit more aware of your surroundings, because living in regional and rural areas, you don't have quick and ready access to support services, really. The internet's fantastic, but the internet can't make you a cup of tea and say, look, it's all right, tell me about it. Just having somebody around is huge. People who live in regional areas which are close to metropolitan centres, like Geelong and Wollongong, etc., fine. But people who live in Albury, Wurrung Nabil, even Alice Springs, where we have a lot of listeners, and in northwestern Australia, where we have a lot of listeners, they face particular issues of isolation. So gay men coming out, and gay men quite often... you can sort of tell that they're gay. We discussed this last week. How do we know that we look gay? Some of us do. Some don't. But lesbians who grow up in regional and rural centres perhaps have different experience. And I think it's actually, from friends that I know, I think they have a much harder time of it.
Well, look, a really dear friend of my family, you know, my family come from San Remo, which, you know, is only an hour away from Melbourne now, but used to be a cut lunch to get down there before the freeways when I was a child. And the neighbour of my grandfather's farm died recently in her 80s, And she was your classic lesbian that had never married, had spent her whole life growing up in a country area, always doing the boy things out there on the farm and riding the horses and helping on the farm. And then when her father became more elderly, she became the person that looked after the father and shunned relationships of any gender to keep her existence. And she was able to remain under the radar in a very homophobic sort of middle 1900s Victoria, all the way through to when she passed away not long ago, and never actually came out publicly as being a lesbian. So a very closeted lesbian for 80-odd years.
What a shame.
But that's experience, I think, that underpins most of the redneck cities and country towns we have, where people don't have the ability to come out. Or if they do, they've got to move from where they love to be to move to a big city to then come out.
Let's hope there's a renaissance of understanding. It's happening, and enlightenment. It is happening across Australia. The metropolitan areas are fine, and the regional centres close to metropolitan areas seem to be okay. So it's the people who are living out in the country that we're particularly worried about. And as I was saying, lesbians quite often have a more difficult experience. I had two friends who were lesbians, and they both lived in Charters Towers, and they were separate families. They grew up in the town together, but they eventually got together and they set up house together, and their lives were absolute hell. The locals gave them such a rotten time. This is in the 70s, mind you.
Yeah.
They gave them such a rotten time. They did things like they put ropes around their fence and pull the fence down.
Oh, extraordinary.
You know, and
now that's externalised violence against us. There's also violence within our community, Adam. Now, you guys probably aren't aware that if you're a same-sex couple living in rural regional areas versus a same-sex couple in metropolitan areas, the levels of partnership abuse, domestic violence within gay couples, tends to be amongst lesbians in rural regional settings and tends to be gay men in urban settings.
Really?
Disproportionately, those two. If you look at the relationship violence within our communities, lesbians in rural, regional, gay men in metropolitan areas.
How do you know?
The stats are there. You've got to delve through the published police data around where they respond to, around domestic violence incidents.
That's a good topic for a whole show, isn't
it? It's definitely there. And we've got to tackle that. We talk about violence against our community. Part of the AVP's brief is to tackle violence and to talk about violence that happens in our community. And that's the domestic violence and the racism and the other forms of violence that happens in our community.
I've been with my partner for 9 years and I've raised my voice to him once. And we haven't had. Mm. But my partner before that, who I was with for 12 years, Peter, will know all too well, we used to have the most horrific fights. I mean, the eye gouging and trying to get each other's eyes out with coat hangers and the knives and everything were just the way we used to show each other how in love we were.
And Adam, Adam had tried to gouge his eyes out, he'd say, "But you know I love you."
So, I understand all of this violence in relationships. Greg Adkins, there was a particular event that happened in Melbourne, and there were similar events, I believe, happened around Australia for Idaho that you were telling me about that I wasn't aware of.
Well, the one you're talking about, there are actually probably about 70 events that took place right across Victoria for Idaho, and they're still happening. International Day Against Homophobia might be one day, but the action and the resolve continues for weeks and months, if not the whole year afterwards. But a fabulous thing that happened in Melbourne on International Day Against Homophobia, about 5:30, 5:40 p.m., just as it became dusk, Gemma DeMarco from also Foundations Youth Services had organised a flash mob to take place down at Federation Square.
Flash mob?
She promoted it through networking, social networking on Facebook, and getting people to then send the message out through their networks. And around 200 people registered, I believe, for the event, and slightly less turned up. And at about 5:40, with trams walking past and public walking through Federation Square, suddenly all the people there froze and fell to the ground like they were dead bodies. And there was a 3-minute display of people commemorating the impact that homophobia has on gay men, lesbians and transgendered people.
That would have been absolutely brilliant. What a fantastic statement.
You can go to stophomophobiatoday.com and check out the video that's posted from that flash mob.
Would we be able to hyperlink it from the Allegro webpage?
Certainly can.
That is a brilliant statement, and it would get the message across. Because I can't help but align this with a video I saw that I watch about once a week. Was it a railway station in Antwerp? Have you ever seen this video? It's a railway. It's on YouTube. It's a railway station in Antwerp, and people are just going about their normal business during the day, in the morning, peak hour. And then suddenly over the speakers, instead of the train announcements, it's, let's start at the very beginning. It was Do Re Mi from Sound of Music. And these two people started to dance around in the middle of the concourse. And as the song went in, more people joined in. And by the end, there were thousands of people, it had all been set up, doing this huge choreographed version of Do Re Mi from The Sound of Music with a techno backing. It was amazing. It was so positive. You must look it up on YouTube.
And those positive messages about social change and the need for change, they just resonate right through communities. Whether you're gay or lesbian, straight, whatever, they actually connect to your feelings and about how you feel about equality and impacts it on people's lives. So, I mean, all strength to Gemma DeMarco from also for her Idaho initiative, and we look forward to great things next year.
I want to do one now. I want to design one. I want to design something a bit more shocking. I don't want to sort of do anything rude, but I think that's great. God. It's a fantastic creative idea how to draw attention to an issue by using a lot of people.
Now, you can check out StopHomophobiaToday.com for other Idaho initiatives that took place, and antiviolence.info, Adam and Peter, is where you need to go to report violence.
Okay, and what we'll do is we'll put all of those on the Allegro webpage. It's allegro.org.au, and I'll put those hyperlinks on today.
Terrific.
Greg Adkins, thank you so much for being a contributor to so much in the Australian gay and lesbian community. You're Thanks, brilliant. Adam. I love you.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll be back, and oh yeah, there's you too as well, Peter.
Thank you.
I like you a bit.
All right.
I like you a lot. I'll see you all next week, everyone. Bye.
Bye.